Jema. There is a ancient story, the story of Phrygia in Greece, where a peasant who becomes a king, he makes a very complicated knot and he says that it's prophesied actually that whoever is able to solve this puzzle, the knot is like a puzzle, will become the king of the world or emperor of the world. Many people try down the line, they don't succeed. And then comes Alexander and he finds a solution. What is the solution? He takes out his sword and cuts the knot. It's a well-known phrase, of course, we all know, Gordian knot. So Gordius is the king, name of the king, Gordian knot. So he cuts it. And generally it is idiom or phrase or the story is recounted as, when you cut the Gordian knot, it's like you have solved a problem. But my take is that he didn't solve the problem. And therefore, though Alexander is called as the, Vishvavijeta, if you read in the books, you'll find. But he never could conquer the world. He returned back from the banks of River Bias. So his kingdom extended from Greece to Bias River. He couldn't enter India itself. So there is a Gordian knot which is, you have to resolve it. You can't cut it. And not only Alexander, just as an aside, it's true of many who tried to conquer India, including the British. We know that Far East kingdoms of the Ahom Empire and subsequently many areas in Northeast, Sikkim, Jammu and Kashmir, Gwalior, Jaipur, Jodhpur, Baroda Estate, Travancore, Cochin, they were never conquered by the British. Many of us are not aware. We think British conquered India. So my little, it's a way of putting it, I feel India is the Gordian knot. It's the puzzle the divine has given to man. If you solve it, you have it. You have the solution to the problems of the world. So I'm saying this because people often ask why there are so many problems in India. So well, this is the reason that India has taken to solve the Gordian knot. And though people have tried to find the solution exactly the way, Alexander did, it doesn't work out. So how they have tried to solve the problem? One is the Vishuddha Advaita of Shankaracharya. That there is no problem, there is no world, it's an illusion. Now, okay, fine, but it doesn't help anybody who is in the illusion. If you say, especially because the bigger challenge is, if you say there is nothing like an individual soul, it's just an illusion, then technically one person's getting free should free everyone. It doesn't happen. Also, then who is the one who is trying to get free and gets the freedom? If there is no individual soul, then it all doesn't make sense. Then there is only one reality, one consciousness. So there is a truth of, again, as I said, there are two ends of the knot which we have to solve in every puzzle. I was giving the example of opening the wool. Those who have done it in childhood when mothers would be knitting and children were given the task of opening the wool. It was very fascinating. One end of the wool is in the spirit and the other end is in matter. So what we have been doing, we are doing exactly like Alexander, cutting it into two halves. There is the spiritual truth. Shivoham, Shivoham. And there is the truth of material existence which have nothing to do with. In fact, so there we have these three different approaches. One is that this is a complete illusion. Come out of it. So basically, we are saying that, well, this material reality and with all its ramifications is like in sleep. There are various examples people give. That in sleep you are dreaming. When you wake up, you realize all your dreams where hocus pocus. But problem is where person who is in dream. There are people who get heart attacks in dream and die. Dream has an impact. If you measure the body rhythms, you'll see the body parameters, they get altered during dream. So this is one way they try to explain, because then there is nothing to explain. There is only one reality. This world is a myth. It's an illusion. So there is nothing to explain. And this leads to many funny conclusions, but we need not go into that. Like one of my friends once wrote to me his marriage card, deeply impressed by his newfound love for Advaita Vedanta of the Shankara type. I mean, Sri Aurobindo is also Advaita, but let me, not illusionistic Advaita. Sri Aurobindo used the word realistic Advaita. So he sent me a marriage card. Priya Atman, I Atman is marrying another Atman. Everything was Atman. So I said, thank you Atman, very dear friend, but I said, thank you Atman, I will be present as Atman. Naturally, no gifts are needed because Atman needs nothing. So now this is the kind of division in which, and this you can see in Indian thought, in Indian life, it has damaged Indian life like anything. It has broken integral truth into two parts. This is not to say that what Shankaracharya said is wrong. Well, there is a truth of the spirit. Nobody can deny it. But it's incomplete. It's like Alexander doesn't become the world conqueror because he comes to the river Bias and goes away. There is something which is left undone. And that is the part which Sri Aurobindo is there to solve for all of us. And that's why we can hear the word that comes again and again in Sri Aurobindo's thought is synthesis. He is denying nothing. That's the beauty. But he is synthesizing all of them by taking everything one step up. And from there, everything finds its meaning. Everything finds its place. So there is a place of the experience of the world as Maya, illusion, and the divine as real, supreme as real. He would not even use the word divine. There is a place that there is this world and there is that world. This is my sasural, not a very good analogy. And that is my babul ka ghar, my original, very bad analogy actually. Because then you treat it like it's never yours. So anyway, so this is one way to look at it, that this world, we are here on it's a guest house. Many Zen stories are like that. And that is the original truth. We have to go back. Now all these stories look very fine. But the problem of the world remains. So the third example is that, well, this and this are, well, different. But you can connect in some way with that, the Dvaita Siddhant. There is a way you can connect. You can get support from there. And it will help you. Like, you know, Pakistan getting help from America. So you can, but ultimately this state will be broken. Because you can't live. You are not developing. You are only seeking help. See, that's why in Dvaitvad you will see a lot of puja, seeking help from God and everything. But you don't develop at all, because you leave everything. For everything we have a puja, for everything there is a home, for everything there is. So your own growth, which is part of the whole journey, part of the divine program, remains incomplete. So there are different schools of thought, and Sri Aurobindo now brings the whole synthesis. How to make the synthesis? Very simply, the divine is not only above, he is also in the world is in him, and he is in each and every activity of the world. Now, this is the fundamental truth on which the synthesis is being built, as we are seeing in this chapter. Everywhere we'll find the same truth. So you can start from anything. And one of the examples that is often given by Swamiji is of, Dvait or Dvait Advait, which is always very funny. One is, of course, of the rope and the snake illusion. And we'll talk about it, how incomplete it is. And the other is of the wave and the sea. Now we'll first touch upon the wave and the sea. You'll hear it, all kinds of podcasts. They say, well, we are like the wave, but as a wave, we don't know the sea, so we suffer. So the logic is that come back into the sea. Now, look at the whole problem from the sea's point of view. Does the sea suffer because it has waves? If you ask the sea, he'll say, I'm enjoying the waves as much as I'm enjoying the vast expanse. So there is a possibility of a life where you are one with the sea and yet you don't deny the wave. This is where you have the Aurobindo synthesis coming in. We don't have to deny one for another. To deny the wave and merge into the sea is actually incomplete. Imagine a sea which is static sea. There is no power, it can't throw a wave. But sea has within it a power which throws up waves. And that's how we see the Maya came in. How Maya came in? Oh, all this problem because of the power of the sea which threw up the wave. So what is that power? That power is Maya. So waves become different. Yes, but that power is one with the sea. It is the joy of the sea. It is playing sport of the sea. And we too can participate in the sport of the sea, not by annulling our individuality, but by knowing that it is one section of the ocean needed for this delight. It doesn't annul other waves. In fact, it'll understand better. This is one of the experiences that comes very clearly as we move up the ladder of consciousness. Up is not a very good word, so sounds like hierarchy, but we go deeper. We discovered that truly speaking, at one stage, there is nothing you can say that this is not God. You can say that there is a distortion, there is a limitation, but everything, even the denial of the divine, it's amazing. Even the denial of the divine is a preparation for a greater affirmation of the divine. Because what are you denying? You are denying a particular concept or an idea or an experience of the divine. But can we deny there is an origin? Of course there is an origin, there is a source. The moment you admit there is an origin and the source, you may call by whatever name. That's why we have in our thought such a wonderful thing, Ekam Sad Vipra Bahudha Vadanti. And that's why they, when they spoke of that truth, they spoke of Satyam Ritam Brahatam. They didn't give a name. But you can give names, you can have different approaches, sects. So all that are included. But the problem is when we deny this totality, each way which it thinks my way is the only way, my way or highway. So others think that by going into the ocean we are done with it. No, they are one reality. This is the first thing to understand. The cosmos and the individual are both part of an integral truth. So the cosmos specializes or expresses itself in any individual through a certain selection. Who does the selection? Maybe the cosmos, cosmic being, or the individual, because there is a selection. So that's how they say that in each life we have a certain kind of nature or personality which is different. That's why attachment to personality can be so dangerous. These are, you know, when someone, there is an aphorism of Sri Aurobindo. In fact, there is a little story of the mother. That's a much simpler. So she was asked that what will Beethoven become in his next life? A greater musician? Then she said a very interesting remark she made. Maybe, who knows, a cobbler. But she didn't say it in a demeaning way. She said it is to approach the same problem from another angle. It's a delight. That's one of the trainings in the ashram, that somebody is not greater or smaller. It's the same cosmic problem or the same cosmic joy expressing itself in different ways in creation. So that makes life so wonderful. It gives place for differentiation. It gives place for, and that's what Sri Aurobindo would tell us. We see everywhere. Every leaf of a tree is unique, like every thumbprint is unique. But equally we can say, well, the cells of the man of today and the basic cell of the animal is fundamentally the same. What is changing inside is the genetic code and the DNA. But DNA is the basis. It's the same. So there is oneness and there is variation. So when we try to annul the variation and say that there is only one, we create divisions from sect to sect, religion to religion. my one greater than your one. Like I said, one of my friend, he would say every time he will come and say, Shirdi Sai Baba famous refrain, Sabka Malik Ek. So I would tell him, I hope next line you are not going to say, but my Malik, that Sabka Malik Ek is the one who is my Malik. I said, if you say that, then there is a problem. So, just this is how divine has made this world. It's so beautiful. It's rich. It's complex. It has variety. And that is the original plan of the world. That is unity in multiplicity. Otherwise, there was no logic at all in this creation. Again, this was the problem of dvait, everything. That to go through a long process, journey of creation, and it's not an ordinary journey. If you look through lives, so much suffering involved. We can explain it by isolating God and saying this is all karma. But where is the original karma of the soul which took a plunge? Then they try to say, no, soul is a creation which has somehow come up here. But it is immortal, goes from life to life. So these are mental gymnastics through which people have tried to solve a problem, but never to a completest possible satisfaction. Because if the end was simply that a soul goes through this extremely painful experience, or well, pleasure and painful experience, maybe a pleasurable experience which turns painful after some time, which is even worse. So, only to realize what it always was, that raises a question mark on the pragya, the divine pragya. So basically, if the divine is one and infinite, this creation is meant to express his infinity in infinite ways. So unity in multiplicity is the state in which the divine dwells, and we too can arrive at that state. Right now we live only in multiplicity, so there is a fight, tussle, quarrel. But for the divine, everybody is his children, every point of view. He doesn't say, oh, you are not my child because you don't believe in him. Divine will not say that. Divine will say, I have veiled myself in you because you are not yet ready. You are still my child even though you deny me. That's how Tulsidas puts it. No, that, you know, that only by kripa you can understand. Who's? Divine has veiled himself. Why he has veiled? He'll say he's not ready. Let him be in that state. So from the divine point of view, there is no issue. But problem is from our point of view, because we don't understand creation. So now with this background, we see how Sri Aurobindo is explaining to us step by step all these different aspects of creation. So right now, we are still with the individual, eternal and the individual. So we must first resolve this temporal, time-bound individuality which we call as ourselves. Is this the true individuality? Sri Aurobindo says, no, this is only a outer facade, but there is a true individuality. Very easy to understand even by everyday experience before we go deeper. Well, if I go in the school and teach, somebody may say, are you a teacher? I would say, yes, here I am a teacher. Right answer is that. But at home, I am a student and my wife teaches me all the time. Okay. See, now everybody is smiling. It's a fact, you know, because she is my teacher. Are you, she's an aspect of Jagat Janani. I am not saying this in bad humor, but in good humor. Okay? So because she may be Kali, she may be Durga, she may be Lakshmi. So if you understand this, life is beautiful. And if you don't understand, there is a fight. So I am a teacher here, but I am a student at home. Are they contradicting each other? No, they are the same person. So individuality and the cosmic, they don't cancel each other. They in fact fulfill and enrich each other. The cosmos reproduces itself in countless bodies in numberless ways. And it has practical implication. None of this is just theory for, okay, now I have got it. Because personally to me, anything which is just theoretical and philosophical never appeal. I must have it. What are its practical implications? So we will see the practical implications. So, he says that there are, we are on page 383 and we'll read today a little quickly. We have then to recognize these two terms of our existence, a world being and an individual consciousness, individualizing consciousness, this end of the paragraph, which is the cause of all our self-experience and world experience. So there is the world being, we cannot deny that. But it is individualizing itself in a certain way. Everything that is there in me is also in the world. There is nothing we can say is not in the world. So, you know, Nana Patekar's sentence stands. That mera khun, tera khun, sab khun ek hai. But this is too trenchant, a very Maoist, communist kind of understanding. Equally, it is true that yes, my blood and your blood is same. But if you indiscriminately join, you may kill me. Because there is also the truth of differentiation. So, there are these two aspects which are always there. There is the world being with world possibilities and there is the individual being in which it individualizes itself. And this is where the problem lies. Let's say a person believes I am superior. That's nowadays debate is going on the four jati, varna and all that. But it's so silly. If you really see in each one the divine, padabhyam, the shudra is from the feet, the vaishya is from here, the kshatriya is from the chest, and the Brahmin is in the head. But if they think I am the superior and such is inferior, there is a problem. Because all are from the one divine. The moment you discover the one divine, this goes away. All this sense, you see that each one is an aspect of the divine manifesting in different ways. That's how the mother would say that, you know, even the squirrel, I am the mother. The cobra, I am the mother. The tree, I am the mother. So practical implication that if we don't turn a spiritual movement into a collective ego, that's a danger Srivinda points out. But let's not get into that. If we truly realize this truth, then can there be anyone whom I can call as my enemy? All are children of the same mother. Does it mean I'll not fight? No, I'll fight. Brothers may fight. But that sense of hatred, animosity, all this will go away. Even for the Kshatriya, this was the highest code. Once the person is defeated, end of the story. Don't kill him. The true Kshatriya followed it. That's why we see that Karna has a big hesitation in killing Karna. And Sri Krishna had to explain to him that, look here, you are not killing him. You use Divyastra. He followed a wrong track and removing him is indispensable for the, you know, the Kauravas, finishing the Kauravas, which they are not ready to listen. But see, when you kill Karna, kill him with the Anjali Astra so that he reaches his divine abode. So even war becomes a play, which we sometimes see in the Kathakali dance. It's amazing. You have Kathakali dance, many of us must have seen it, when you have the story of Durga and Mahishasura. It's so cute. Both are dancing and the whole drama is taking place. But you don't feel, oh, Mahishasura, you should know. And it is there even in our story, at the end of Mahishasura story, since I am speaking of that. So Mahishasura, at that peak moment when Durga is to kill him, he suddenly surrenders to the Divine Mother. This is the original story. He is not killed. He becomes her servant. How beautiful. That this is the original truth. The day you realize it, all this play loses its meaning. But we see further that in the end, this Purusha, this cause and self of our individuality comes to embrace the whole world and all other beings in a sort of conscious extension of itself. And to perceive itself as one with the world being. And what better example than the mother? When mother is there, she would go to every department. She would teach how to wash the dishes. She would take the classes in French, in the music, drama, poetry. Everywhere she is there. It's amazing. She's not saying that my children are only those who sit and meditate. It's just imagine. It's unimaginable because it's the original truth that the divine doesn't discard its creation. He enriches each thing in its own way. And she knows the right law. That's how the word rith comes. There is a right law of things. There is a story where a group came to know about Sri Aurobindo's yoga. And the mother asked, Guess who? Ambubhai to go and talk. Ambubhai knew asanas, if you have seen his photograph, not Puraniji, but Ambubhai. He is very good in asanas, but he cannot. He said, "Mother, me, yes, yes, you go and talk." So he goes and says something and then comes back. They are very happy, impressed. So he asked the mother, "Mother, all right, but why did you send me? Amal Kiran is here. You could have sent him." He said, "No, no, no. Amal would have given too much of knowledge. They would have turned away. They are not ready for it. You told them just what is needed." Now you see, it's an eye-opener. Everything has its place. You know, Dodo in Alice in Wonderland. All have won the prize. Only it must be in the right place. That's all. The whole problem of the world is, as she says, evil is things which are not in the right place. You put it in the right place, it's not evil anymore. That's why we see in the story of Mahabharata where Krishna is asked by Yudhishthira much before the war takes place. In his yajna, what task should I give to Duryodhan? This is a lesson even our ministers should learn. Opposition, the way it behaves. So Sri Krishna tells him, give him the task of distributing from the treasury. So he says, why? Of course he obeys it, follows it. Now then the secret is revealed, because a person who is giving should give generously. And Duryodhan gives generously, thinking it is Yudhishthir's money, I must throw it off. So everybody goes happy. So he understands that why Sri Krishna put Yudhishthir there. Anybody else would think, oh, my king's money, I should not give so much. Like sometimes, you know, we have this tendency, no, 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 I should give only this much. But when you take it that, you know, I want to throw it away, that Yudhishthir is doing that. So that place, he's the right person. So the problem of evil is that things are not in their right place. One of them. He will deal with it in the next chapter also. In its conscious extension of itself, it exceeds the primary experience and abolishes the barriers of its active self-limitation and individualization by its perception of its own infinite universality. So there are these two experiences which are simultaneous. In the universal consciousness, it goes beyond all self-limitation. But when it acts in the individual, it consciously limits itself. Next page, 384, 5-6 lines from above. But is all truth of individuality and individualization abolished? Because, you know, in the ocean, is it abolished? Does the Purusha cease to exist? Or does he become the world Purusha? He is talking of the individual Purusha. Or does he become the world Purusha and live intimately in innumerable minds and bodies? We do not find it to be so. He still individualizes itself. And it is still he who exists and embraces this wider consciousness while he individualizes. You can see it in Sri Aurobindo and the mother's life. Sri Aurobindo's life, when his father-in-law writes a letter to him, 1918, he has the experience of Parabrahman. He writes to him that Milali has passed away. She was going to come, and Sri Aurobindo has said, okay, let her come. Or he knew that she is coming. And she started from Shillong, Calcutta, and she developed malaria fever. And she died of that fever, 1918. Now when father-in-law writes to Sri Aurobindo that Milali Devi has passed away, 1918, okay, not, he has realized everything possible. So he's not saying, which Milali? I am no husband anymore. I have no wife. He's not writing that. He is writing, it's immortalized by Nalnida in one of his little short writings, "Teardrop in the eyes of the divine." There is a little glint of tear. It's that love, which is not about husband-wife. He is not suffering, oh, my wife is gone. This will be the stupidest thing to draw conclusion from. Because each soul and the kind of link, who knows what kind of relationship, as someone wrote about her being Usha Devi and he being Aniruddha, but that apart, subsequently she came as Ishadi. So the kind of suffering she had to go through simply because Sri Aurobindo went on to fulfill the work for which he came. So it was not an easy life. It's but natural that for a moment, that teardrop, it's a teardrop which is recognizing what sacrifice she has made. Knowingly unknowing. It's not teardrop, oh my God, my wife is. No, not at all. That is a noble, divine teardrop. That's why Nalinda has written teardrop in the eye of the divine. And then what does he write to his father-in-law? He says, I fully approve that you do all that Mrilalini would have wanted. He is not saying, I want this, I want that. You do whatever she would have wanted. You must be knowing because she was staying in Shillong most of the time. But for myself, I'll be happy if you can send me a few books which are signed by her. Everybody wants Sri Aurobindo's signature. It reminded exactly of Radha and Krishna to me. I mean, I'm not saying she's Radha. But when, you know, Radha is leaving the body, Sri Krishna goes there and she asks, what do you want? He says, I want you to play the flute. I haven't heard it for long. So he plays the flute. After that, he breaks the flute. That I will not play it for anyone. Nobody else, Sri Aurobindo would say, I want a book with your signature on it. So this is a relationship which is as divine. So it's not like annulling that, well, na tato, na mata, na bhrata, na bandhu, shivoham, shivoham. This is very nice sounding, but this can be pretty misleading. It's an experience without a doubt. But it is like Alexander's experience of reaching the banks of Bias. That's how it is, half the experience. This is an inner truth. But it is equally true that there is a world of relationship. Now we can deal with this world of relationship either with the ego. What you did to me, what I did to you. Let's take a list out and fight and fight and fight. Till we get tired and sleep. We say, okay, we will not fight. Then next day again there is fight and fight and fight. Yesterday it was because what you made in vegetable had less salt. Today it has more salt. Some reason to fight. No, that will go away completely. Because you are able to see that there is a she too, or he too is an aspect of the divine who has come up in this manifestation. The same divine. And if you realize that divine, then it will be so beautiful. One is intellectually to live like that, which is good enough. But another is to actually realize that, well, it is the divine, and you would smile and you would understand that her anger has, you know, it's okay. Like Mridudi, who writes to Sri Aurobindo, writes because Sri Aurobindo, that day he just gave away, she used to cook for Sri Aurobindo, send nice luchis and sabji vegetables, and Sri Aurobindo gave it to everyone and he didn't taste it. It's a serious problem for a bhakta. And she was terribly hot-headed. So when she came to know, there are people, very nice people, who came and told, you know, Sri Aurobindo did not eat. Now she said, oh, is it? I am going to commit suicide. Wrote to Sri Aurobindo a letter. Now you see what Sri Aurobindo is writing. He is not writing a philosophy of the Gita. He is not saying, what difference does it make? You think if you will go, it will make a difference to the world? You think I will miss out on a disciple? Don't you know that, you know, suicide is bad? Nothing. He is writing a small note. If you commit suicide, who will prepare such nice luchis for me? This is called Ritchit. Understanding the right law, the truth. He's not just pleasing her. There is a place she has in the manifestation. And that place should be there. It's been given to her. It's the divine truth why she is where she is. And that has to be respected. So there are many practical implications of this. All sectarianism, all this will immediately go away if we live this little truth. So he says that, he gives the example of the wave, and it is still he who exists and embraces this wider consciousness while he individualizes. But the mind no longer thinks of a limited temporary individualization as all ourselves, but only as a wave of becoming thrown up from the sea of its being, or else as a form or center of universality. This is the change that takes place. Ego, I am a separate personality, individuality. By that, I'm so and so, Mr. So and so, and this language, that job description. But you know that you are a wave from the infinite sea, and the wave must fulfill the purpose for which it is born. We see that in Sri Aurobindo's poem, The Rishi. Read the last two pages. It's a long poem. But he says, we must remember, we are sparks from the eternal fire. We are waves from that infinite sea. And the wave must fulfill the joyously what it is born from. Same thing in Baji Prabhu. When Tanaji Malsure tells Baji, I am going, but I know what you have accepted. When I come back, I'll make for you a pyre, chita, as nobody else has ever made. Because it's a suicidal mission with 20 soldiers, 50 soldiers. You are fighting an army of 20,000. He won, incidentally. That's a different. Read Baji Prabhu. It can make a dead person come alive. So, Baji Prabhu says, oh, you think I am this 5'6" person for whom you will make a pyre? Come on. I am not this body. In fact, when I go, I know I am going to go. I will fulfill what I am here to do. When I go, I will wait for you, Tanaji. When you will come, we will embrace each other and take the joy of it. See, it's practical implication. What did Umang Khetrapal, movie has been made, a kiss on that. What was he thinking when a 21-year-old says, no, I want to go to the border, I want to go to the border, send me there. And he dies there, but that tank battle has become immortal in history. Who are the people who can do it? Who instinctively in that moment, like Abhimanyu, it's not tragic. They become one with the universal self as well as the individual. Death of Abhimanyu changed the whole war. After that, there were no rules. Everything that Sri Krishna advises later on is after the war, after Abhimanyu's death, because they broke the rule. Sacrifice of Abhimanyu changed the whole, tilted the balance of the war. So there is a much deeper secret, and there are people who feel it and live it. Christ from his cross humanized Europe. Socrates, he says, no, I will take the hemlock. When Critos comes and says, please, I have bribed all of them, you can escape. I have given them all silver coins. And Socrates says, no, that won't be me. I will take the hemlock. Sir, any last wishes? I owe a debt to so-and-so. You please give the cock to him. He is clearing his debt while leaving the body. Now imagine a Socrates running away at that point of time. If he is an egoistic person, he will say, oh my God, God's grace that, you know, he has come to release me. Very good. And he would have escaped very easily. But he chooses to drink the hemlock, and therefore Socrates is immortalized. So you see, it makes an entire difference to how we look at life. When somebody asks from the mother, that mother, when we desire something and it is given to us, it comes to us, it must be grace. She says, may not be. It may be your own desire expressing after a long time. Grace may be denying the desire. It may be giving the desire and denying the desire. So this has practical implication in our understanding everyday life. There is no enmity with anyone. There is no shrinking from any action. Because we are always living with the sense of the universal, with our individuality being only a little wave. We are not rushing to merge into the ocean. We know that the whole ocean energy is supporting us. What tremendous power there will be. A yogi is much more dynamic in action, because he is supported by the whole ocean. It is not an ego supporting him. That's the difference between Karna and Arjun. So this is the practical difference. So as a wave of becoming, why I am giving this example because standard practice, you will see in all the big, you know, podcasts, wave and the ocean, wave going back into the ocean. But why? They are one. Why you are creating a division of something which is always one? Remember that you are the ocean and in this life, this wave. That's it. That's all that is required. As a wave of becoming thrown up from the sea of its being, or else as a form or center of universality. Each of us to realize we become a center of the divine action in the world. This is what he speaks of in the synthesis of yoga. The soul still makes the world becoming the material for individual experience. But instead of regarding it as something outside and larger than itself on which it has to draw, by which it is affected, with which it has to make accommodations, it is aware of it subjectively as within itself. It's not afraid of the world after that. Tato na vijugupsate. The world dwells within such an individual. It goes into the world and feels at home everywhere, every home. Because it's the one, see how Swami Vivekananda went all over and how beautifully, you know, he felt at home. Because he's not a little ego trying to pluck things from here and there. The whole world is one being, one consciousness. And yet, he must fulfill what he is born for. What he is meant to do. In this new consciousness, the spiritual individual, he's using the word spiritual individual, is the psychic being, of course. The spiritual individual perceives its true self to be one in being with the transcendent and seated and dwelling within it, and no longer takes its constructed individuality as anything more than a formation for world experience. Constructed individuality is the ego with all its apparatus, instrument, senses, etc. It's like the difference between the person and the vehicle one is driving. So, it's needed for the world play. But he always knows that I am not this limited creature, yet he must act to fulfill the role as a limited being. And I mean, he is not a limited being anymore, but as that particular formation thrown up by the universal. This was India of old, before Mayavad came in. And this I say 100 times, and let people write whatever they want to. This is the Gita yoga of Shri Krishna. Because you see, there itself he has solved the problem. When Arjun says, no, I'll not fight. They are my brethren. How can I fight with them? It's better that I live on alms. I'll become a sannyasi. Fighting is bad. Violence is evil. Look what Shri Krishna says. In very simple terms, he says, Arjun, be the instrument I need at the moment. Nimitta matra bhava savyasachi. But he also says, if you don't want, no problem. I can make and make an eye. He's the ocean. He can pick up anything and that can become the instrument. So, the ego and the truth inside, and then of course Arjun realizes it, the difference. So, this is the original Sanatan Dharma where we don't divide things into, but now we have all these and as a result so many paths, schools, sects, etc. which have confused the minds of people. Exactly what Shri Krishna wants, na buddhi bhedam, that you know, the knower of truth should not create division in the minds of people. So this where we see, our unity with the world being is the consciousness of a self, which at one and the same time cosmicizes in the world and individualizes through the individual Purusha. This is the experience of the sea. You tell the sea that your wave is an illusion, he'll say, get lost. I am throwing not one wave, countless waves. This is the difference. That then is a self with a capital S, which must be one in its being. Otherwise, we could not have this experience of unity and yet must be capable in its very unity of cosmic differentiation and multiple individuality. The unity is its being, yes, but the cosmic differentiation and the multiple individuality are the power of its being. So this is the fundamental difference. And that's why people who couldn't understand it, they created a division between the divine and his power. Whole Mayavad comes from there. That Maya is of the, you know, on one side you say it is power, because where is the power coming from? And what kind of dialectics? Long back, while doing my medicine, I had read, nice book, Vivek Chudamani. But I said, why? This is not explicable. Really, there are so many loopholes that you end up Maya as something which is adhyarop. You know, it's imposing itself on Brahman. And Brahman must be very helpless. But if it is allowed and it's the all-knower, it knows what it is doing. So we have a very poor opinion of Brahman. That's our problem. So, this last part I'll read and then we can take a break. We are on page 385. So he says that since they coexist, if there, then we arrive at unity with that. If we even become entirely and in every way that being, why should the power of its being be excised? And why at all should we desire or labor to excise it? If this is the fundamental truth, that the ocean and the waves are in their essence one reality. It is the delight of the ocean expressing in waves. It is the power of the ocean expressing in waves. Why should we desire to excise it? And when we excite, where will we go? Back to the ocean. So, you know. It would in fact be the individual seeking peace and rest of union in a motionless identity. But rejecting delight and various joy of union in the nature and act and power of the divine existence. You can do it, but then no delight, it's that peace. The shanti of Shava, not the shanti of Shiva. This is the difference. So while one can do it, that is possible, but there is no necessity to uphold it as the ultimate aim of our being or of our ultimate perfection. So that's what he is saying. You can do it, you can vanish. No problem. Maybe it'll make no difference. Maybe your wife may say good riddance. But the world existence is there. The world play, the world sport is there. It's a sport where delight is multiplying itself. It changes the whole thing. And that it's the experience which changes it. It cannot come by just thinking, because different parts will. But it's a real experience based on which Aurobindo is reminding us. Or the one possible reason would be that in the power, the act of consciousness, there is not real union, and that only in the status of consciousness is there perfect undifferentiated unity. These are the gymnastics through which people have tried to know power, Maya. But that's not true. See, when you are one with the mother and your work is nothing else but she doing through you, that delight multiplies when you see that same divine mother in different ways, in different people. There is a very nice bhajan which I had heard from Bengali Sufi kind of saint. He sang, Amar eke Krishna man bharena, ami anek Krishna dube chahi. I am not satisfied with one Krishna. I want to drown myself in infinite Krishna. So these are the two basic differences, and we can stop here and continue. So it's there. Ashram life is meant to realize. That's why the individual and the collective. If we take only the individual yoga, then we lose out this collective dimension. Because, well, I go and merge with the divine. What happens to the world? It's Maya. And let people manage it. Or probably they were non-existent. Or they are illusion. Whatever it is. And that has led to the ruin and downfall. But if we regard the world existence and the individual as two sides of one reality, then collective yoga has a meaning. Because then everything that is being done, not only individually but collectively, that's an impulse in everyone. Naturally it is there. We don't want to just, you know, sit, do some nice bhajans and merge with God. We also want to serve Him in infinite ways. Okay, so we'll stop here, come back after 10 minutes and continue.